you want to raise the platform, you can. There's a little button underneath. No, no, the platform, not the...
I think I'm okay.
Okay.
Thanks, Your Honor.
It's one of the modern marvels. It goes up and down.
May it please the court. My name is John Storino, and I represent defendants Governor Blagojevich and Director Walker in the Riley and Snyder cases, which have been consolidated for oral argument. Now, both Riley and Snyder were assistant wardens at Illinois correctional institutions. Assistant wardens are the second highest officials at correctional institutions in Illinois. Riley was the assistant warden of operations at TAMS Correctional Institution, and Snyder was the assistant warden of programs at Taylorville Correctional Center. Both Riley and Snyder allege that they were terminated by the new...
How large are these prisons?
The prisons are... the TAMS Correctional Institution has 200 beds at minimum security, and then a 500-bed maximum security section, which houses, as we say in our briefs, the most disruptive, incorrigible inmates in IDOC. The Taylorville Correctional Center has 300 beds, which is a minimum security prison. Now, both Riley and Snyder allege that they were terminated from their positions by the new Democratic administration for political reasons after they themselves allege that they criticized the new Democratic administration's running of IDOC.
With regard to the duties of the assistant warden, now, if the warden is sick or something of that sort, or he's on vacation, what are the assistant warden's powers?
That's an excellent point, Your Honor. And the powers of the assistant warden at that point is the warden. In both the official position descriptions that we submitted for Riley and Snyder, it is clear that they have responsible for being the duty warden. As Your Honor stated, sometimes the warden is on vacation. Sometimes he's off for a day or two because, as everyone knows, prisons are a 24-hour business. The warden can't be there all the time. And when he isn't there or she isn't there, it is the assistant warden that serves as the duty warden and would have the same responsibilities as the warden.
So he's really a deputy, although called an assistant. There's just one assistant warden?
For each institution, there's an assistant warden of operations, as Riley is here, and there's an assistant warden of programs.
Which one takes over when the warden isn't there?
It's the assistant. Each have duty warden responsibilities in each of the position descriptions, and each report directly to the warden.
Yeah, but if the warden isn't there, which one of them is the kingpin?
It will go to the assistant warden of operations first, which Riley was.
So they're not equal to
wardens. Your Honor,
some
they are
more equal than others.
Exactly. They both report directly to the warden, and they both have duty warden responsibilities, but the assistant warden of operations is a little more...
So Riley was operations.
And Snyder was programs. And
in this case that our court issued recently, the Kitty Brown, she was the warden, not an assistant warden. Is that
correct, Your Honor?
What institution? I don't...
She was the warden, I believe, of Pinckneyville Correctional Center.
And how big is that?
You know, I do not know off the top of my head, Your Honor. But we believe the Kitty Brown decision, which this court issued, is distinguishable from these two cases for three reasons. First, with respect to the Snyder case, it was decided in a different procedural posture. In Snyder, it was decided on a motion for summary judgment, and Kitty Brown was limited to the standard a motion for judgment on the pleadings. Also, critically here, both Riley and Snyder stipulated to authentic nature of the position description. This position description is maintained pursuant to state law, and it outlines the duties inherent in the position. As this court is aware, on a Branty inquiry, you look at the duties inherent in the position. For a plaintiff to say, I didn't do some of the duties inherent in the position, this court has held time and time again that that's insufficient to avoid dismissal. Now, looking...
So Kitty didn't have that stipulation, is that what you're saying?
No, and not only was there not a stipulation...
It was challenged.
It was challenged. She challenged the validity of the position description. Here, Riley and Snyder stipulated not only to the position description in effect at the time, but they stipulated to earlier versions of the position description, going back to 1989 and 1990 for their position. And if you look at the earlier versions of the position description and compare them to the position description in effect at the time that they were terminated, the duties are substantially similar. Therefore, the duties inherent in Riley and Snyder's assistant warden position have been clearly ascertainable for 15 years and 10 years, respectively. Now, the stipulation here is also critical because not only does it distinguish this case from Kitty Brown, it brings it within this court's decision in Thompson, where Judge Bauer for the court properly noted that when there's an official position description, that the authenticity cannot be disputed, that that controls and outlines the duties inherent in the position.
Which case? I'm sorry.
Thompson, Your Honor.
The Upton case? Upton?
Oh, no, it's Thompson.
Another Thompson. Thompson versus the one with the about the administrative law judge? Or?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And in that case, the chief administrative law judge was found to be Branty exempt, and the court there relied on precisely the same type of document here, a CMS official position description which outlined the duties inherent in the position. And in Thompson, just as Riley and Snyder are trying to do here, he tried to argue, oh, well, you know, I didn't do some of those duties. I did less than those duties. And Judge Bauer, writing for Thompson, wrote for the court, stated that, no, you can't make that argument. You are not challenging the validity of the position description. What you're really challenging are the legal implications from the duties on that position description, and that is not a proper inquiry under the Branty test.
You know, this these numbers are sort of interesting here, that you've said there's a limited number of people, a couple hundred, that are patronage kind of jobs, the policy-making jobs that can't be replaced by a new administration if they so desire. Do people in Illinois know that? I mean, if you're somebody, you work in a prison, you're not an assistant, and now you've got a chance to become the assistant warden. Do you know that if I'm going to be the assistant warden now, I could get fired if there's a new administration?
Yes, Your Honor, and that is an excellent point. When they move up into one of these exempt positions, all IDOC employees that are moving up to an exempt position have to sign a form saying that they are in this exempt position. Moreover, with respect to the position...
Did Kitty Brown do that, and did Snyder? And
now, the evidence to that is not in the record, Your Honor, whether they signed or not, but as an officer of the court, I can tell you that that is IDOC policy. Moreover, with respect to the position description, this touches on what Judge Evans is asking. These are maintained pursuant to state law under Central Management Services. Also, they must be approved, these position descriptions, by the Illinois Civil Service Commission. Beyond that, Illinois state law gives IDOC employees and all state agency employees the right to have their position description reevaluated. In that, if someone's the assistant warden for 15 years and they say, you know, here's my position description, but I really don't do all that stuff, they can file a request for a review in front of CMS, Central Management Services, saying, you know, I really don't do that. They'll investigate and make a determination. Now, this cuts the other way, too. If someone is performing more work than they do in their position description, they can say, you know, I should be bumped up a pay level because I'm actually doing more than what my position description indicates.
I forgot now. Judge Evans' question reminded me. How many exempt positions are there in the Department of Corrections?
I believe, Your Honor, that is in our briefs. I should know off the top of my head.
You say 217.
Okay.
1.5% of the...
217, and that's 1.5% of the
whole... 14,000...
IDOC employees.
193 employees.
Uh-huh, uh-huh. 113. Thank you, Your Honor. So obviously it is a 1.5%.
Are those all? Is there anything below? And are these wardens and assistant wardens, and you know maybe bureau chiefs in the department itself, or are there people below assistant wardens in this
exempt category?
That there are the next level down. I believe is a shift commander, which would be solely responsible for officers and correctional security issues.
Are they exempt?
That's a good question, Your Honor. That issue has not been.
Don't know. The answer is
exactly that issue has not been litigated and resolved. But also, that is a very good point, Your Honor, in that it gets to our qualified immunity defense. Even if this court finds that some right was alleged by Riley and Snyder here, the assistant warden position has never been determined to be...
Yeah, but doesn't that... Wouldn't Kitty, apart from the, you know, just the issue about the validity of the... Wouldn't Kitty be an a fortiori case for qualified immunity? Wouldn't a governor assume that wardens, yeah, obviously I can fire a warden. I mean, warden could get me into very deep trouble, right? That's someone you certainly want to be responsible for.
I agree completely.
Prison riot or something like that?
I agree completely, Your Honor. And we argue just that this court has recognized in other contexts how critical prison is, that it's literally matters of life and death, and that the decisions that these people implementing policies at these prisons, they can affect the political fortunes of elected officials. And I think we've seen that in modern society in recent examples. I see I've run into my rebuttal.
Do you want to save your time? Okay.
I wouldn't.
That's fine.
Thank you.
Mr. Szymanski?
May it please the court. Your Honors, my name is Scott Szymanski. I represent Samuel Riley in case number 043085, and he is the plaintiff appellee and Thomas Snyder.
How many positions in the Department of Corrections do you think the governor can fill or not fill on political grounds? Any?
I believe the governor can and does fill positions at the executive management level, such as chief of operations, the director, assistant director, deputy director, assistant to the deputy director. All of those positions certainly...
All of what?
How about wardens?
I don't believe the warden should be a political position.
Ten positions?
I'm sorry?
10 positions?
I believe there may be 7 districts in the state of Illinois, and those 7 districts each have a deputy director and assistant deputy director. There's 14 positions, chief of operations, as far as the public information officer within the department.
Warden sounds like a more responsible position, actually, than an assistant director of a region.
Well, as far as the warden being a responsible position, the warden is a very responsible
position.
With
a lot of discretion, a lot of judgment, has to use judgment, and can get the governor into a very serious problem if he doesn't handle a prison riot properly or lets people escape or what have you.
Well, Your Honor, that may be true, but also I don't believe a Democratic warden would handle a prison riot any differently than a Republican warden. Just like a football coach...
Know?
Should
Look,
it does,
I mean, on that theory, why would a Democratic assistant director of District 5 handle his work any differently from a Republican? Your argument goes right up to the top.
my argument does go up right up to the top because those
and
officials...
And you end up with no positions at all that can be...
Well, the director is a statutory position, which...
That's one. One out of 14,000.
The chief of operations is...
Well, how is the chief of operations any different? Why do you think a Democratic chief of operations would be different from a Republican?
A Democratic chief of operations would have direct contact, essentially, with the director and the governor and would have direct ability to make and see that policy is implemented. Those specific issues would make a chief of operations much more likely to be a patronage higher than a warden.
But not an
assistant.
Not an assistant regional director.
An assistant regional director would have contact up with his superior, who then has contact through
contact with his superior and so on up to the governor, too. That latter doesn't help you. Also, what bothers me about the case... If I'm Governor Blagojevich, how on earth do I figure out who I can fire?
In this particular case regarding assistant wardens, the state of Illinois, a court in the state of Illinois in the Derringer case, has specifically ruled that assistant wardens are not subject to patronage dismissal. And that case is still good law. So the state of Illinois, a court in the state of Illinois, has already provided the governor with guidance regarding assistant wardens. And
well, you were also the attorney for Kitty Brown.
I was.
We were told a few minutes ago that wardens and assistant wardens are put on notice that those positions are subject to dismissal.
There's no factual record to say that Kitty Brown or any of the individuals, Riley or Snyder, was put on notice. Specifically, there's an allegation in the Snyder case that he had no knowledge of the position description.
So what the counsel for the Department of Corrections told us is not accurate?
I don't know if it's accurate or if it's inaccurate. We haven't been able to develop whether or not that actually exists. A representation by the lawyer for the Department of Corrections does not necessarily make the fact true. And if there is any documents, that's the whole point of us proceeding to develop a more full record.
So now, you don't regard these job descriptions as determinative, but if you're the governor, what do you have to go on besides a job description to figure out whether this person is at the policymaking level where he can be fired for political reasons?
Well, the governor could go on history. Historically, the position of assistant warden and warden have been positions where people are elevated through the ranks. And as they become more experienced within the Department of Corrections, they get higher positions within the Department of Corrections. And that goes all the way up through the warden.
They have to do a history study.
So
you come into office, you're governor, you have to commission a study of history to find out who you can fire.
Well, I'm not saying that you need to commission a historical study. What I'm saying is this specific circuit has said that historical treatment of the position is appropriate consideration for whether or not...
Well, I'm wondering if we're giving enough weight to the need for these politicians, to know who they can fire, where they have to wait till it's litigated.
How about... here there's a claim that these particular people were very critical of the new administration.
No, the claim in the complaint is that these particular individuals had public safety concerns, and they voiced those concerns, which every citizen has a right to do that. They had concerns about unlawful activities of the administration. If you're an employee or not an employee, every public citizen has the right to voice those concerns.
Right up to the top, right?
Certainly right up to
that
the top, but there's no evidence in the record where this went, and that's one of the...
Let me finish.
I'm sorry.
That doesn't distinguish the head of the department or the assistant head or the deputy or the regional directors, right?
Every public citizen has a right to address those
particulars. Right, and the logic of that is that the governor can't fire anybody.
If the chief of operations voiced a concern about illegal activities within the government... He cannot be fired for voicing those illegal activities. No.
Of course he can.
Based on his public speech.
If he's a policymaking official who serves at the governor's, pleasure, he can be fired for criticizing the governor.
Policymakers cannot be fired if their criticism is unrelated to their job.
The president can't fire a cabinet member for criticizing him?
If the criticism is unrelated to his job duties.
You must be kidding. You think the president of the United States cannot fire a cabinet officer who for criticizing the president?
I think that could be challenged.
That's an amazing argument. I mean, I've never heard that. That's the strangest thing I've ever heard.
I believe that could be challenged.
So in other words, the president has no control over his own cabinet.
The president certainly does, but if the president is engaged in unlawful conduct in that cabinet...
Suppose the Secretary of State says the president is doing a lousy job. He's not paying enough attention to U.S. foreign relations. And you're saying that the Secretary of State couldn't be fired for that criticism?
I did not say that whatsoever. What I said was, in the specific instances we have, unlawful conduct, public safety issues, unrelated...
Yeah, public safety. Suppose the Secretary of State says the president, in his foreign policy, is not sufficiently attentive to the public safety of the American citizens. And so the Secretary of State is fired, and you're saying, well, that's illegal.
That general comment would not...
Well, you said public safety. That's your term.
I'm saying that the complaint contains allegations related to public
safety. How much specifically the president ignored the problems that created the situation at 9/11?
I'm sorry.
The Secretary of State says, I believe the president ignored indications that would have prevented the terror act of terrorism in 9/11. He didn't do anything. Could he be fired for saying that?
I don't believe that. I believe someone could be fired for saying that. What I'm saying is the...
But isn't that a matter of public interest? Isn't it a matter where he's saying his irresponsibility was criminal in nature? It was so bad.
Well, if there was unlawful...
Wait a minute. Can he be fired for saying it?
Certainly he could be fired for saying something like that. What I'm saying is the allegations in this complaint were not such that they were fleshed out to a point where we don't know what was said.
So what Judge Foster was trying to do is to see how far you went with that theory, that as to where it is that the chief executive lacks authority to stop somebody or fire somebody for some reason or no reason at all.
Well, I believe that's what the courts are for, is to challenge whether or not the activity of government is legal or illegal. And in this particular case, these employees believe that the activity of the government in firing them because they spoke out regarding prison safety, the public in prisons, regarding unlawful activities regarding employment.
They were fired because they were Republicans.
I'm sorry?
I thought they were fired because they were Republicans.
These are two independent and distinct causes
of action. They were not Democrats.
They were fired.
But your whole case was that these people cannot be fired on political grounds.
That is part of the case,
right.
Correct.
So presumably Governor Blagojevich wanted to put in Democrats or supporters or something like that. Isn't that why he fired these people?
I think the evidence will establish that Governor Blagojevich did put in Democrats.
Precisely. That's your whole argument. I don't know why you got diverted into public safety. Maybe that's my fault.
Let me ask you this. You got apparently these two cases in Brown, and then there's a bunch of cases that are on hold. How many people did the new administration, of these 217 exempt positions, how many did they change?
How many did they change? Yeah. I don't know what the specific number is, but I know that I have
ballpark.
I know that I have 15 clients, all of which are at the assistant warden and warden level. I don't know specifically what the number is, and you know that would be something that would be developed later. But I do know
Judge Shader's case was summary judgment, where a lot of all this kind of information could be put into the record if it was anybody thought it was.
I'm sorry. Would I be able to tell you if I was allowed to get all that information?
The case Judge Shader had, I don't know, with Snyder, I think. That was resolved on summary judgment, where each side gets to put in whatever evidence they want. I'm just interested in how many. I can't imagine the governor would go and make a whole, you know, remove 217 of these people, even though he could. But you're going to just pick and choose, aren't you, as a practical matter?
To answer your question, the Snyder record is contained simply the complaint, the answer, and an affidavit that the district court allowed based on a sua sponte conversion motion for Snyder to file. Now, there is no other record, and that is one of the issues that Snyder has on appeal, and that is that the conversion was improper because it wasn't a reasonable opportunity provided to Snyder to present the whole plethora of facts that he had and could present, public records,
other evidence. You want to have 15 trials, I know. Do you think a deputy sheriff is a policymaking job in Illinois or not policymaking?
I believe a deputy sheriff, based on what the facts produces, the duties, the actual duties and responsibilities inherent in that function, could be a policymaker. But that
isn't
in
that
of itself...
Isn't that kind of a paradox? You have a deputy sheriff who's a policymaker, but a warden or assistant warden of a prison is not?
I believe it's...
Makes sense?
I believe they're not the same at all. I believe a deputy...
You think deputy sheriff is a more important position than to be an assistant warden?
I believe when you consider the context of a deputy sheriff...
Deputy sheriff is a cop, right?
A deputy sheriff would ostensibly be a police officer, yes.
So you're saying a police officer in Illinois is a policymaker, but a warden is not.
I'm not saying that at all, Your Honor. What I'm saying is to take your
analogy. You said that a deputy sheriff is a policymaker.
I'm saying that in some context, a deputy sheriff.
What contexts are those?
In the context of a deputy sheriff who is the right hand man to the sheriff, who is an elected official.
Well, the assistant warden is the right hand man to the warden, right?
The assistant warden could be considered the right hand man of the warden, yes. And in the Kitty Brown case.
And a warden is less important official than a police chief of a little town?
Yes.
Three cops in it?
Yes.
Yes? Okay.
Yes. And
well,
in the Kitty Brown case, the Seventh Circuit has specifically stated that a warden position cannot,
Did they distinguish the Upton and Dimmock cases, which involved the deputy sheriff?
There was a discussion regarding those cases. Yes, there was.
In the opinion?
Yes. And the opinion goes on to say that...
Opinion talks about those cases?
Yes. Mentioned. I don't know if there is a lengthy recitation to...
How about a short discussion?
There are citations to that case. I don't know in what context they bring up those particular cases. But there is a discussion of Flenner. There's a discussion of Malazzo. There's a discussion of the fact that ministerial employees who allege that they have well-defined duties of limited scope, who are constrained by a variety of means, whether it's statute or their superiors, are not such employees that they could be fired for political patronage. And in the Riley case, we're at that specific stage of the proceeding that was involved in Kitty Brown, and that is the motion for judgment on the pleadings. Snyder is not all that different because the district court, in its opinion, said, I'm going to rely on a 12C, a motion for judgment on the pleading standard, because I'm going to take into consideration that all the facts of the complaint are true. So therefore, in essence, it's a 12C motion with a little aside allowing Snyder to file an affidavit, which, when you review the opinion, the district court gives no credit to the affidavit. Now,
actually, in Kitty, I don't think it cited those cases. And in fact, it doesn't discuss any positions. Seems odd. You'd think in a situation like this, you'd look at our prior cases and see how we have sorted through these various officials. And a paralegal is not a policymaker. Yeah, that's fine. But with a deputy sheriff and... Here's someone, a deputy county auditor? That doesn't sound like a big shot. Sub-district superintendent of the highway department? An inspector in the city health department? I don't know. Does this make any sense, this crazy quilt of cases we've decided, which are not discussed in Kitty?
It certainly makes sense. It certainly makes sense, and it certainly applies to the assistant warden position, which Riley and Snyder, in this particular instance, say their position is such that even if the court determines that they were policymakers, and we don't concede that they were, even if this court does, and a lower court does, that doesn't mean that political affiliation is appropriate. There's been no demonstration that because they're policymakers, and to what extent they are, political affiliation is appropriate. Like I mentioned at the beginning, an assistant warden and a warden in Kitty Brown, which isn't at issue here, they're not unlike the head football coach, which a Democrat or Republican does not make.
A what?
A head football coach.
Football coach?
Right. Which Branty addressed. Branty addressed, stated that a head football coach has significant
responsibility. So you think the job description looks like the job description for a football coach?
I don't know. There was no description as for a head football coach. The analogy is appropriate because a head football coach has ostensibly some sort of discretion. But that doesn't mean a Democrat or a Republican makes a better head football coach.
Well, I would agree with you. Okay, well, thank you very much, Mr. Schmanz. Mr. Storino, how much time does he have? 2 minutes?
Listen, Ditka's a Republican.
Your Honors, I would just like to address a few of the points raised by opposing counsel. The Derringer case, which opposing counsel cites, we address in our brief at page 38 in the Snyder brief. That case involved a claim under the Illinois Personnel Code. It did not raise a First Amendment claim for patronage dismissal. Also, it was decided before the Supreme Court's decision in Branty. Therefore, the inquiry that we're involved in here was not even addressed there. Secondly, as Judge Posner was discussing, the Kitty Brown case does not address the Upton case and does not go into it did not decide whether a warden was a policymaker or not. It was merely a procedural ruling that we believe is distinguishable here. Finally, and Judge Evans was talking about the Snyder record, and it was a motion for summary judgment. And I think it should be pointed out that after it was converted, the plaintiff submitted an affidavit about what he did or did not do in the position, but at no point did he request any discovery. He did not file a Rule 56F affidavit outlining what discovery he would need. So to argue now that more discovery was necessary would be improper. That issue has been waived. Unless there are other questions, I am finished.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Mr. Storino, Mr. Schmanz. And case will be taken under advisement, and court will be in recess until 9:30 tomorrow.
Thank you.